The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into our sunny Tuesday edition of the Leach Report. One step closer to the start of the new college football season for the Kentucky Wildcats and everybody else. And glad to have you on board with us today as we will focus on the Cats and Mark Stoops' opening press conference yesterday and the decision to start Terry Wilson at quarterback and all of the news that came out of that. And we'll do that with our friend Larry Vaught from over in Danville. Also, John Hale from the Courier-Journal and Jeff Drummond from Cats Illustrated. That's our guest lineup presented each day by Sleep Outfitters. The Wildcat news of the day is a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. But we'll start with something that's not Wildcat news. It is it would be more Hilltopper news. The passing of my dear friend, John Asher, longtime executive in charge of communications at Churchill Downs, but I've known John for, close to 40 years, certainly more than 35, I think. He was just a dear friend. He was the most associated face, I think, with Churchill Downs and the Kentucky Derby for just the casual sports fan, like many of you are, that maybe don't follow racing, but you follow the Derby or you know about the Derby, and so you've seen or heard John Asher post-position draws. Maybe you watch those kinds of things. He was kind of succeeded another friend of mine, Jim Bolus, in the role of unofficial Derby historian. I don't think he ever officially was given that title, but should have. John was doing play-by-play for the Catbirds, a minor league basketball franchise in Louisville in the early 80s. And I worked at a station in Paris, my first job there. And a guy that I worked with had worked with John, and he offered to get John to do a critique of one of my tapes. And somewhere I still have that critique. So that's how I first got to know John. 10 years after that, we were both covering the Kentucky Derby in 1993, and our wives were both due to give birth around the Derby. So all of Derby week, we had pagers then, not cell phones. I guess there were cell phones in the world, but we didn't have them. But you had pagers. And so we were kind of on call all week to see if there was any news. As it turned out, both kids were born the week after C-Hero won the Derby, but we always had that connection. If we knew it was his middle daughter and my oldest, my son, we always knew how old they were because they were born at the same time, almost the same time. Couple of funny stories about John. One I'll tell when Larry Vaught joins us here in a minute. But the other one was out at Keeneland. We're covering Keeneland one Saturday, and it had been a brutal day of wagering. And the feature race was over. We were done with our work. And so we're looking at the last race and sitting across the table from John in the Keeneland press box. And we kind of find our way to the same horse in the last race that is 50-1 on the tote board, but it's a grass race and there's turf in the pedigree of the horse. And we keep looking around at the competition and we kind of keep talking about it to each other. And a friend of ours, a photographer, Bill Strauss, overheard and said, "That horse is 50-1. Said, "Yeah." And we said, "Yeah, it is." And so, and Bill said, "If you guys handicap a 50-1 horse and he wins this race, I'm going to jump on this table and proclaim your greatness." Well, tap routine won. I had $2 left and bet $2 to win. John had $6 left in his pocket and bet $2 across. But The real joy was not the cashing the ticket. It was Bill having to jump up on the table and proclaim our greatness in the Keeneland press box. And then I got from Bill later a win photo. John did too, of tap routine. And I know I still have mine. I suspect that he still has his. And it was just a really sad all day yesterday. It was hard to get excited about the, you know, what's normally an exciting time with the start of football season. So I'm spending a lot of time just talking about a good friend here. And I appreciate you guys indulging me for doing that. A lot of football news that we'll get to as well as we move through the show with Mark Stoops picking Terry Wilson as his starting quarterback yesterday. I will talk about that with Larry Vault when we come right back. Cole Anthony, five-star guard in the class of 2019, he's cut his list, 2020 I think it is, cut his list as 12 schools, and then that includes Kentucky. And one other piece of news, a medical condition is forcing Jackson Davis, to give up basketball at EKU. Hate to hear that. He's the son of former Cat Jonathan Davis. Links to the stories that we talk about each day can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. Larry Vaught, when we come back, John Hay a little later, Jeff Drummond after that. It's the Leach Report Radio Network. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
Look for the Leach Report on Facebook. Show updates, contests, and other cool stuff. Check it out today.
16 after the top of the hour, it's the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Larry Vaught joins us from VaughtsViews.com, LEX18.com, and it's a game week and a lot of Kentucky football to talk about, Larry. I did want to ask, though, I think I saw via Twitter yesterday, you had some interaction with John Asher, right?
Yes, yes.
Just a good guy.
Terrific guy. I don't think he ever met anybody that he didn't consider a friend. And very stunning news to hear about the passing of John. Won't be near the same at Churchill Downs as John Asher.
No, and the it won't. And there's one other story I was going to tell. I thought I'd wait till I bring you on and tell this one because you'll remember this game. John was a passionate fan of his alma mater, the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers.
Yeah.
And it was Joker's second year, would that have been 2011, and Kentucky, remember, lost to Western on that two-point play that they ran, throwback pass. They won right at the end, and I think it was an overtime. It was either two-point play or touchdown. Anyway, it was an overtime win, Western. And leading up to that game, I'd talked to John, and he was confident Western could win. I didn't think they would, but he was confident they were going to win. And so I didn't talk to him game week, but I get ride down the old Commonwealth Stadium elevator, and after the game, headed to do the coaches show. And when I walk off the elevator, the first person I see is John with a big smile on his face. And he had his daughter had a volleyball game that night, but he was listening to us on the broadcast, listening to the game. And because Western was doing well, he jumped in the car and drove to Commonwealth Stadium after the volleyball game. So he arrived as the game ended. He just wanted to be on the see it on the field.
It doesn't surprise me because he was very passionate about his Hilltoppers.
Yes.
Hilltoppers,
yeah.
No doubt about that.
Well, let's move on to keep me from crying here and get into some Kentucky football. Landon Young, we'll start there. Mark Stoops said to talk about that yesterday. That news came over the weekend. It was the first time he talked since that news had broken. And I know you've talked to Land a lot. I have too. There's a lot of great young men on that team, none better than Landon. So he'll come back from this, but you just hate to see it because you and I think it's going to be a better year than most. And if it is, you know, he would have loved to have been out on the field helping make it happen.
Absolutely, and not a better young man than Landon Young, and just devastating, especially. You hate that you have an injury at any time, but to think it was just in a non-contact, this kind of routine drill, this kind of one of those freak things that sometimes happens in football. This makes it all the tougher. And I know Kentucky's got depth along the offensive line. What they don't have now is experience at that position. Landon's played every game since he's been in Kentucky. It started, I think it's what, 15 games over the last 2 years, and that's a lot to pass on. And I think he just missed Landon's disposition and personality and everything out on the field too, because he's a guy that just his heart out every time he played, and playing for Kentucky meant so much to him. And I'm just really, really sad for him. And I know he was a guy that I thought probably would have some decisions to make at the end of this year, maybe about whether to finish his career in Kentucky or think about going to the NFL. And that certainly changes his outlook on a lot of things. So you really, really feel for Landon and what it does to this team. But more than that, you just feel for what it does to Landon Young.
Yeah, no, I agree. And so Kentucky's going to have a quarterback that's never taken a snap in a major college game, protected by a left tackle that's never taken a snap in a major college game. As I told Mark Stoops last night, I said, I don't know how you normally sleep the night before a game, but I suspect it won't be as well as whatever it might be normally.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, again, it doesn't matter who's a quarterback. You want that left tackle. That's kind of your spot that you want to really feel good about. And hopefully E.J. Price or Nasir Watkins, one of them, you know, shines and does terrific over there. But again, the one thing that you can't duplicate is the experience that Landon Young has. And you've got to think now when teams line up to play Kentucky, they're going to look at that and say, hey, this guy's just starting his career. Let's throw everything in the world we got at him. And Landon would have seen all that. These other two guys haven't. So we'll have to see how it plays out going forward. But again, it's not a good situation for the team, because it just cost you a guy that had been so stable and worked so well with all those other guys up front.
Yeah, because last year you lost Cole Mosier, but at least you had Landon Young, who had played as a true freshman, had some experience. Plus, you had, you know, some other guys to rotate through there. And now, you know, Coach Stoops said last night they don't want to move George Asafo-Ajay over to the left side. They feel he's settled in and is really thriving at right tackle, so they don't want to move him. And they've got other guys they've moved around, but nobody really at the tackle spot. They've moved guards around more. But, you know, I know they're very high on Nasir and on EJ, and so now it's just going to see if one of those guys come through.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And here's hoping they can. I mean, EJ was certainly a highly regarded guy coming out of high school, but it's been a couple of years now since he's been in a game. And then I know Watkins was a guy that I think Kentucky had a lot of debate about whether to play him or not play him last year. I think probably, Tom, if the same rule last year with the red shirt was in effect as it is now, probably he would have played not just four games, but would have played in more than four games last year, because they wouldn't have had to take a chance. And we're going to play him in a game or two, and if he's not ready, we won't go ahead and keep. We've blown his red shirt year, whereas they could have done that. So the rule kind of comes a year too late for him, but hopefully what he learned in practice all will pay off, because last year I heard just good things about him every time I was over around the football facility.
We're talking with Larry Vaught from VaughtsViews.com. You can also read him at LEX18.com. We'll take a quick break and come back and continue talking Kentucky football here on the Leach Report Radio Network.
This is where the Big Blue Nation gathers. It's Talk Radio 1080 and the Leach Report, followed by Kentucky Sports Radio.
Chat with Larry Vaught. Kentucky football opens the season Saturday against Central Michigan. Mark Stoops announced yesterday that Terry Wilson, the JUCO transfer, will be his starting quarterback for Game 1. Read a story yesterday by a writer at Saturday Down South, and I'll see what your take is on what his take was, which was that he was surprised that Wilson ended up being the choice. He thought that Mark Stoops, being a guy that has a defensive background, that has relied heavily on the running game in recent years when he's had his most success, and that he thought he would go with the perceived safer choice of a guy who'd been in the system longer, who was a little more reliable, maybe perceived to be a more reliable passer anyway. And he thought that since Mark had chosen to go with Terry Wilson, that maybe he sensed that this was a chance to capitalize on a big year with the veteran talent that they have, and take a little bit of a gamble with a guy who offered more upside but also more risk. Any merit to that thinking, you think, Larry?
I don't know. I really had never thought about that, Tom, but that's an interesting
take.
theory it really is, because I think I'm probably one that could go along with that, because all along I thought Gunner would be the guy, just because, and again, it's probably unfair that I even thought this, because we haven't seen either one of them to really know, but just going by all I had heard, I thought Gunner was a more accurate passer, and I thought with the pieces they had around the quarterback this year, that having an accurate passer would be the biggest priority for anything. Now maybe Terry's a much more accurate passer than what I've been led to believe, or I've heard of. I will find that out. And of course, now with the injury to Landon Young, it maybe makes having a mobile quarterback even more of a priority, even though Mark said yesterday that the decision had already been made or didn't really take into consideration what had happened with Landon. So I don't know. It's just a tough thing when you're a quarterback and you don't win the job and you've been there and you've fought so hard and you've been loyal, and now all of a sudden you don't know if you're ever going to even get to play, because I think Mark did the right thing yesterday by not saying, yeah, I'm going to definitely play both quarterbacks, because I think he was very honest when he said, I don't know, you don't know what the situations will be, and I've been a guy that's been loyal to my starting quarterback, and I think that's what a head coach has to be if you want your starting quarterback to play with confidence. You can't be afraid that one mistake is going to bring him over to the bench. So that really puts Gunner in a tough spot, but hopefully he hangs in there, and I'm sure before the season's over there'll be a time Kentucky's going to need him, and I hope he gets that chance.
You've got a story up at your LAX 18 column about Jordan Wright, one of the reserve linebackers, and just whether it be him or somebody else, was just curious to your take. Stoops mentions some true freshmen that might see action. There are some guys like Jordan Wright and Jamin Davis and others that are on the two deep that are going to get their first chance to show us what they can do. Who's somebody you think we'll be talking about maybe after Saturday's game that we aren't talking as much about in the lead-up?
Well, that's really a good question, Tom. Maybe a guy like Adrian Middleton, and I really don't know why even somebody like me hadn't talked about him as much, because he's a guy with experience. He's shown he could make plays. We've talked about Quentin Bohanna a lot, and I've had a lot of people tell me that Adrian really had a good off season. So maybe that's somebody we'll talk about even more than what we have, because it's kind of hard when you get to this point. You've talked about everybody so much, mm-hmm. It's kind of hard to not talk about guys, but maybe, I don't know, Isaiah Epps also. I just still think maybe a wide receiver, he's a guy that can be a big playmaker for Kentucky, and there hadn't been a whole lot of talk about any receiver really other than maybe Lynn Bowden. So I think Isaiah Epps is a guy that I'm hoping maybe will surprise some folks this year.
Yeah, you would think that the wide receiver position could be a spot. There's a bunch of candidates as to who it could be, but could be a spot where somebody has an opportunity to create a buzz, because there's just not much about that position other than the feeling that Lynn's going to have a much bigger second year. Larry, appreciate the time as always. We'll see you on Saturday.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
As Larry Vaught, you can read him at vaughtsviews.com, also LEX18.com, at vaughtsviews on Twitter. Hitting the halfway point of this Tuesday edition of the Leach Report Radio Network, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. John Hale will come back.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can interact with the show via Twitter at Leach Report. Now, here's Tom.
You note on Twitter where former Kentucky football defensive lineman Ricky Lumpkin and is a new dad. His second child, a baby boy, has been born. So congrats to Ricky and the family on Ricky Dale Lumpkin III, according to the tweet from Dad. So that's always good news, a new life welcomed into the world. We welcome in John Hale from the Courier Journal to talk a little Kentucky football. The choice is Terry Wilson. You've written a lot about him since he committed to Kentucky late last year, John. I know you tweeted out a link to kind of the compilation of those stories in the last couple of days. I guess one of the more interesting compliments for Terry is that the new coach at Nebraska, Scott Frost, is a guy that tried to recruit him twice.
Yeah, absolutely. It's it certainly says a lot about what he thought of Terry's skills, especially we know what Scott Frost did to Central Florida, and he was the offensive coordinator at Oregon when Terry signed, or when he committed there. He actually had already left for Central Florida by the time Terry signed, but he stayed there. Didn't work out in Oregon, obviously. Justin Herbert, who was same class, won the starting job there and developed into one of the best quarterbacks in the Pac-12, so it's easy to see why Terry thought maybe going somewhere else was his best option. Then Scott Frost goes from Central Florida to Nebraska. He needs a quarterback as well on this last class, so that week that Terry committed to Kentucky in December, it was kind of up in the air for several days whether he was going to visit Nebraska that weekend or he was going to visit Kentucky. He had originally scheduled a UK visit. Then there were reports he had canceled it to go to Nebraska. I remember we were at a press conference that week with Mark Stoops. I think it was bowl practices or something, and Mark actually came into the room, got up and left because he got a phone call for 4 or 5 minutes and then came back. And the story goes that was Terry Wilson on the phone, and they were ironing it out, and he convinced him to come to Kentucky, fell in love with the campus, the staff when he was on this visit, and then committed that Sunday. So it was very close to him ending up in Nebraska and being Scott Frost's quarterback for the second time in his career, but it obviously worked out well for UK.
I was talking about this with Larry in the last segment. I'll get your take on it, too. As a writer at Saturday Down South that saw that came across this story, and he was opining that he was surprised that the choice was Wilson. He thought that Mark Stoops is a defensive guy, a guy who relies heavily on the run game, would have taken the perceived safer choice in Gunnar Hoke, who had been in the system longer and is thought to be the more accurate passer of the two. But he thought in choosing Wilson that maybe Stoops was saying indirectly that he wanted to go with the take a bit of a gamble on a quarterback who maybe had more upside because he thought the talent around him gave him the chance to have his best season as a Kentucky coach. I don't know if that went into Mark's thinking or not, but what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably some truth to that. I think he certainly knows that the offense needs to be more dynamic than it was at times last year, especially in the second half, in order to get to help the defense as much as possible. And I think he does feel more confident in his defense now, so maybe he's not quite as worried about doing everything possible to protect that side of the ball. I think, though, a lot of it comes down to we know what that offense looks like with a dual-threat quarterback. We saw what Steven Johnson did the last couple of years. Best-case scenario is probably Terry Wilson is a little bit better version of Steven Johnson, at least on the field. We don't know about his intangibles. We don't know about the leadership, the decision-making, all those things that Steven did really, really well. But I think for Mark, it would be easy, if I were him, to look at that offense and look at that decision and say, we know we have Benny Snell for at least another year. Why change things drastically to a different style of quarterback when we know what works, we know what Steven did well, and maybe picking Terry Wilson, you build on the success you've had the last 2 years, but you do become a little bit more dynamic. He has the arm strength to hit some of those home runs down the field. Maybe he's a little more durable than Steven, so he can run it a little bit more. But to me, it's basically kind of keeping the status quo, what we saw the last couple seasons.
For Gunnar Hoke fans, they need only to remember that in the season that we first got our look at Steven Johnson, that year started with Kentucky throwing it all over the field in the first half against Southern Miss with Drew Barker and throwing four touchdown passes. And then as the season played out, it went in a completely different direction because of an injury. And, you know, Gunnar Hoke may well get his chance at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I completely understand why Mark doesn't want to commit to playing both quarterbacks in the first game. It, you know, sends a message to Central Michigan if you're out saying basically you think it's going to be in a situation where the score is comfortable enough to get both guys in. And he's certainly not going to do one of those scenarios where you say, well, the backup gets the third series no matter what. But he acknowledged yesterday that he'd like both of them to play. And I think it's for that very reason. They need Gunnar Hoke to get some live game reps this first month of the season. So if Terry Wilson gets hurt, if something were to happen where he struggles or whatever, you're not turning to a backup 5-6 weeks into the season who's still never played in a college game before.
Let's talk a little bit about the left tackle spot that is a question mark now with the injury to Landon Young. And Nasir Watkins is in the mix there. The other guy that is listed in the depth chart when they listed Orr yesterday was E.J. Price. And you retweeted a link yesterday to a story you'd recently done about E.J., right?
Yeah, EJ, of course, we know in the spring had the incident where for about, you know, 5 or 6 hours, I think we were all in Atlanta for the NCAA tournament. It looked like he'd quit the team. He had came to practice late, left practice early, then tweeted a bunch of things about he was giving up football and various things. By the next day, he was back on the team. A couple days later, our next availability talk with Mark, he was practicing again, and they had worked things out. And I talked to EJ on Media Day basically about that incident, about what happened, and he said he was in a bad spot. He had was dealing with some injuries, obviously the frustration of not playing for 2 years now where he redshirted at USC. He had to sit out last year as a transfer, I think had worn on him a little bit, but he said he had matured. He had learned a whole lot from that incident. He knows how to behave on social media a little bit better now. He was really appreciative of Mark Stoops and the coaches for sticking with him through that, because some coaches might have just said, okay, if you're going to do this, fine, we'll just play somebody else, and they didn't do that, and they kept with him. And he was really appreciative and said he had learned a lot from it. And it seems like it's working out now. They're going to need EJ Price. I think they would have needed him even if Landon had been healthy. But now they need a mature the best version of EJ Price to go out there and play. And he's a really good player. He was a really good recruit. So if he can put it all together on and off the field, maybe the loss of Landon doesn't sting quite as much.
Let's shift gears to basketball. Another story that you did recently, you caught up to Reed Travis's brother, right?
Yeah, Reed's brother obviously played at Harvard for 4 years. He was on a couple of NCAA tournament teams there, knows a lot about college basketball, has been kind of Reed's mentor throughout this whole process, dating back to Stanford. He lives in New York now, works in, I think, an advertising agency there, but still flew across the country 10 or 11 times last year to watch Reed play. Has always been this kind of vocal supporter. He was in the Bahamas watching that. I noticed a couple things he had tweeted during that week about the work Reed was putting in afterwards, and I just wanted to catch up and see how the family had thought through the process of, A, first picking Kentucky and knowing the challenges and the depth and the competition that would come along with that, but also that Reed, you know, struggled a little bit those first couple games in the Bahamas and then kind of turned it around that last game, what they were thinking. And Reed had talked after that last game a lot about how he knew it was going to be adjustment. It was a good kind of progress report and how he had the early work he had done at Kentucky, but the work he still had to do too. And it was very, I think, enlightening to hear from his brother Jonah about just what they expected going into this, knowing that he was going to have to change the way he played a lot to fit in Calipari's system, to fit the way that NBA scouts want to see him play, but also that they were basically came away from the Bahamas encouraged by the progress they had made, but knowing that there's still work to do.
He seems like the ideal kind of Reed, being the ideal kind of Cal guy, in that he took the path, he didn't take the path of least resistance when he was making his decision.
I mean, he could have easily either gone back to Stanford or gone to another program that needed him to come in and start and play 38 minutes a game and just been that same low-post bruising guy who goes through players and dominated the Pac-12 for a couple of years and been a really, really good college player. But he knows to get the best version of himself. I think what he told us after that last game was, I wanted to go somewhere where somebody would tell me, yes, you're very good, but you could be so much more. And obviously that's what Calipari does with all his guys. And for Reed to come to Kentucky to realize that he's not going to play as many minutes as he would have at Stanford or many other programs across the country, but he still might come out of this ahead in terms of both his individual performance in college this year, but also in his NBA stock too.
You can read all of John's coverage this week at courier-journal.com along with the rest of the team, and it's at @JohnHale_CJ on Twitter. Thank you, John.
Appreciate it.
16 away from the top of the hour, heading to a break. It's the Leach Report Radio Network. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Yesterday, we were out in the Palomar location enjoying a great breakfast, visiting with Coach Ortmeyer. We'll be back doing the show at the Hamburg location Tuesday of next week because of the holiday. Great locally owned operation there at Wild Eggs, and they make everything on the menu from scratch, and you go and taste it, and you will believe it and enjoy it for breakfast, brunch, or lunch at Wild Eggs. Jeff Drummond, when we come back.
Find out more about the Voice of the Cats and get great coverage of the Big Blue at TomLeachKY.com.
13 away at the top of the hour as we roll on with our Tuesday show and welcome in Jeff Drummond from CatsIllustrated.com, who was there yesterday taking in the news conference with Coach Stoops. And so I don't think anybody was surprised that the announcement was Terry Wilson as the QB, Jeff. Best case scenario, what's the Terry Wilson era look like?
Well, I think that would be kind of like the last 2 years we saw with Steven Johnson, with maybe a little bit of an upgrade in the passing game. I think he shares a lot of the same physical attributes and the ability to make plays with his legs. But by all accounts, when you talk to people over there who've seen him play a lot, the potential is there to be a much better passer. And I think that's one thing that may surprise some of the fans because during this quarterback battle, it was kind of billed as, you know, one guy is the passer and one guy is the runner. But Terry Wilson has a really nice arm.
And I think that Mark Stoops and Eddie Grand really want this passing game to be better. Steven was beat up, I think, a lot more than we realized last season. And they had a young receiving core, and nobody was really stepping up there. And so I think they really want to be all they can be. They've got to be better throwing the football. And with that in mind, that tells me that they like what they've seen of Terry throwing the football, that it's not a decision primarily based on you know, run pass option plays, that and Terry running the ball. They like what they've seen of him throwing it because I think they want to be able to throw it better.
Exactly, and it tells me that they feel pretty good also about some of their playmakers mm-hmm. that they have, and the fact that they want to get the ball down the field. You know, the guys like C.J. Conrad and Dorian Baker, Taven Richardson. Those guys have the ability to really hurt teams, hurt the opposing defenses with their playmaking ability and to be threats down the field that we really didn't see last year for those reasons you mentioned with Steven, who had you know, all the intangibles in the world and the great leadership and kind of willed that team to some wins that maybe they wouldn't have got without another quarterback in there.
He was, Steven, so good at hitting those deep throws 2 years ago. We didn't really see him so much last year. So the deduction is that, okay, Jeff Bidette must have been a bigger part of that equation than we realized. Who's the guy that could reintroduce that element to the receiving core, do you think?
Well, I think there are a number of candidates in there potentially. I think Glenn Bowden, you know, kind of coming into his own and becoming more of a wide receiver after playing the position full time for a year could be that guy. Josh Ali and Isaiah Epps, who, you know, we saw flashes of a little bit last season, either one of those guys. But we've had an awful lot of buzz in this camp, and Mark Stoops even mentioned him a little bit yesterday when talking about some freshmen who might play. Akeem Hayes is a guy that I would keep an eye on that may be able to take the top off the defense, so to speak.
I'm really eager to see what happens with Lynn Bowden, because he was so highly touted coming into the program and then got here late. And we saw flashes, probably as much as anything in kick returns of his ability, but he could be such a powerful weapon for them coming out of that slot, because he's going to get the other team's third best defensive back probably or something like that in that matchup, and that's a matchup. You know, it's a lot of this is a you know about finding the matchup that your team can win. And that seems to me that'll be one, kind of like when it was Dickey Lyons was in that situation, that mm-hmm. you had the better guy, you know, your slot receiver was better than the corner they could put on him to cover him.
Yeah, I think ideally that's what they would like to see happen quite a bit this year. And the times when they go four wide, I think Bouvier, a guy that they've talked about a lot, during camp, could be another guy similar to that, a real matchup headache for guys in the slot and causing some problems for bigger defenders when you have to come down and cover him with a, you know, a safety or maybe even a linebacker. It sounds like that he was a constant playmaker in camp against defenders like that.
For as long as I can remember as a college football fan, you always knew to respect teams out of the Mid-American Conference. They didn't have the big name, but you know, back in the 70s and early 80s, a lot of times it was Miami of Ohio that was occasionally pulling off that surprising upset against one of the bigger name schools. What do you know about Central Michigan?
Well, they've been a very good team for the last 3 or 4 years. I think they've made 4 consecutive trips to bowl games, which should automatically command, you know, a certain amount of respect from Kentucky. They lost quite a bit of players, I think, from last year's team, so they've got to replace people across the board at several positions. But they've got a big physical quarterback this year, a bit of a dual threat that might send some shivers through the spine of Kentucky fans, because every time we talk about a dual threat quarterback, it seems to be one of those guys that gives the Wildcats a problem at times. And they've got a very good running back in Ward, who Mark Stoops said yesterday will be playing football for a really long time, implying that, you know, he's going to be another guy in the league. And, you know, that's been an area in which, you know, Central Michigan, if you look back in their recent history, they've produced maybe the best wide receiver in the NFL, Antonio Brown, from the Steelers, an all-pro tackle, Joe Staley for the 49ers, and they had the number one overall pick. And that's something that kind of escaped my mind until I looked it up. I think in 2013, Eric Fisher, another offensive tackle, came out of Central Michigan as the number one overall pick in the NFL draft. So these guys always have a certain amount of talent on their roster. It just maybe not quite the same amount of depth of talent that a Kentucky will have. But you can bet they're going to have some playmakers on the field Saturday.
Yeah, and you know, this is if Kentucky could win convincingly, I think that would make a strong statement about where Kentucky is. I think this is it's not a sexy name, but any team out of that league is, you know, when you beat a team from the MAC, it's a quality win.
Yeah, I think so. When I think of the, you know, MAC football, it's always solid. I think football, and they seem to be one of those leagues that even if they lose, you know, they could wind up losing, you know, 17, 20 points in this game, but I think they'll keep it closer, you know, maybe even up to halftime and into the third quarter before Kentucky pulls away and makes it, you know, a 16, 17-point tight game.
Jeff Drummond, it's at JDrumUK on Twitter, CatsIllustrated.com on the web. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
We'll wrap up this edition of the Leach Report when we come right back.